I'm Cheryl Mosley, curator of film at The Walker. This is an interview with Abigail Child, whose work, Cake and Steak, and Dark Dark, are both featured in The Walker's lecture room throughout the month of March.
And many of your films work with found footage. I always like the word found footage and wonder, where do people find the footage for the films?
It's a good question. I get found footage in lots of different places. Sometimes like flea markets, earlier in the 80s, educational places going out of business. But recently I have a friend, and he's an artist himself, but he deals in old books, but he also picks up film. So he likes my work, so he shows up with shopping bags filled with 16mm and Super 8. And I've almost gotten to the point of saying, stop the shopping bags. I've had enough for a while. But that's actually where Dark Dark and Cake and Steak came from, and the future, from the same source in a varying, different shopping bag. What was interesting sometimes is with something, sometimes pieces of a film come, and, months later, another role from the same, film or the same family shows up again. So it's got this kind of odd found quality to it, super, super found, actually.
So in this whole bag, then, you not only have all of this work material to look at, but then how do you go about selecting the images that you choose to put into the films?
Well, I usually, put it on the projector and look at the work, and sometimes work talks to me. It's just I see it and it resonates in some way, and sometimes I can't articulate it exactly. Take Dark Dark. At one point I saw it was about an hour of footage when I first saw it, and I knew it was interesting, but it sort of sat in the back of my brain, and it wasn't until about 8 months later that I was thinking about it and I suddenly realized I could make a film out of it. So, I'm not exactly sure what clicked, and then other footage, sometimes it's what I think is beautiful, obviously. Sometimes it's what's perverse or bizarre or extraordinary in what is in the image itself. And with something like The Future, which we're not talking about exactly right now, it was such extraordinary material in and of itself. But so it's that. And for Cake and Steak, I still have much, much, much more family footage. And at a certain point, I started to work with it. And again, maybe I have 7 hours and I make selects to an hour. And then I look at that and begin to build intuitively and formally structures. And then I look at the pieces I've built with and I select from them again. So it's a kind of, it's subtractive in that I'm trying to get down to what resonates the most with me, but it's additive in that I will play, and certainly with the digital apparatus now, you can, copy and loop and make all kinds of rhythms. So it's additive in that way.
Thank you. Talking about Cake and Steak, it's really about growing up in America. And again, this footage is primarily from the 1950s. How did you think that, your thinking behind the 1950s telling the story about growing up? And I guess it's maybe two questions, whether that was a time where you were growing up or whether it's just maybe that America was growing up after World War II.
Well, I think it's both, clearly. I actually was growing up I'm a baby boomer, so it's the 50s and the 60s. And I'm actually from North Jersey, and this footage is all from North Jersey, so it had a particular resonance for me. It's not my family at all. But I do have the sense that sort of the 50s was this moment of America's, naive explosion after World War II as a kind of world power, and this American dream. And I feel like my family participated in it, as many people do. And I remember always thinking, Jersey highways and Jersey suburbs are much like the rest of the America. You go to Ohio and it's recognizable. You go even to California and it's recognizable. I mean, of course, there's difference in climate, but there's a kind of elemental America about suburbs. And I think all my, you know, coming from the suburbs, I always thought there's great films that should be dealing with the suburbs. And there are a couple of feature films, but I always wanted to make one. So I guess Cake and Steak is my suburban opus. Although I'm going to work on another one too, which was not found footage. But I think I had that double read, that it was this moment of, maybe the last moment of total naivete, you know, also sort of pure joy in the lawn and the backyard and the twirler and, you know, sort of before Vietnam, before, you know, sort of a change in consciousness.
Yeah. A nice era, and I sort of fondly remember it as well.
Yes. Also, I love the color, the Kodachrome. It just seems so elemental, you know. It's so exaggerated.
Dark, of course, has a different sort of elements within it as well. I think we've called it a ghost dance of a narrative that's gestures melding four found story fragments. It uses noir, it uses Western, it uses romance, and it uses chase. Can you talk a little bit about Dark?
Well, Dark, you know, I mean, I was trying to think of the connection between Dark and Cake and Steak in thinking about this interview. And I thought what both of them are really about in some ways is these, it's kind of the in-between spaces of that are often ignored or unnamed. And I think Dark, in some ways, it's narrative tropes, narrative gestures, sort of taken apart and reconfigured. But I think in some ways I go behind the scenes, say, with the men who carry the slate, which you rarely see in films, but of course that's the beginning of every narrative film, has a slate to sync up the sound and the image. And I love that little dance of kind of the bald-headed men who are kind of talking to themselves in the background. I've always thought, like, in making films, that the process of making films is as interesting as the topic in front of the camera. So there was a sense that I wanted to go behind the scene and open that up. And then on the other hand, the kind of iconic gestures of the story itself, you know, the woman who pauses with the hat on her head, or the woman who gasps as her hair is being cut, she holds the money in her hand. And we laugh because, in a way, the gesture we know is so underlined, but we're also identifying because we know this gesture, we're so familiar with these tropes. And I think because I've foregrounded them, you see them a little bit different. So that I think Dark is this kind of dance of narrative gesture that almost becomes a language. We kind of know it, and we know when it's mixed up or done wrong, and so it's almost like comedy. We get a little extra, joy out of it. At least I think of it that way. And then, again, that dance sort of behind the narrative, behind the screen, the slate guys I'm thinking of, or the multiple takes, you know, that the actor is asked to redo it and redo it and redo it. So there's this gesture that's unsystematized, but we recognize it. And I think that's fascinating to me.
I think when you talk about a dance, it makes me, of course, want to ask about the sound and the music that is with this film and with your other films. Can you talk a little bit about how the music is, how your choices are made and how they work with the images?
Sure. I think the music's somewhat different between Dark and Cake and Steak in an interesting way. Morricone is sort of iconic movie, you know, he's fantastic and iconic movie music. And what had happened, I was working on it and I put some Morricone from other films up against it, and it worked in this very contradictory way, where it's right, but it's wrong. It's full of emotion, but you know it's not quite the right emotion for the image. And I think that's a slippage that's interesting to me and hopefully to the audience. It kind of is what alerts one. So I think that's what the Morricone's kind of running over the piece, but it's kind of like, I love this word, but it's a fun word, asymptotically, sort of that they run parallel, but they never cross. So I think that's what's happening with the Morricone in Dark. With Cake and Steak, I think the music's a little different. I think the music is disruptive of the nostalgia. That it keeps representing or reframing the material, and kind of, it'll sort of loop-de-loop with the material and then sort of pull it out from under you. And I'm doing that very consciously. I'm trying to, push a little bit at the nostalgia that this footage, of course, evokes for all of us. And in both works, I think you know, discontinuity is working, and I'm thinking of time in both of them as, how can I say this, time, I mean, the past time, as a field of behavior. I think what I think of is that discontinuity isn't just discontinuity. It's the way we have memory. If you understand what I mean, that memory is not continuous. You know, we jump back to our mother or what we have to do tomorrow, or so that, you know, this idea of beginning, middle, and end in that order seems maybe not so authentic to the way we live. And so I'm playing with music in that way, to kind of, music and the image, to make the world maybe the way, you'll muse about something, you'll think about something, like the little girls in the dresses, and I wore dresses like that as a kid, you know, and what they meant, and their kind of amazing, fantastic, fantasy quality. And, you know, I can play with that, and then I push it a little bit, so it's not just, so it's a little more thoughtful. I mean, I think that's what I'm doing when I'm, you know, pushing the music up against the image, is